From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Investors are often looking at profits, but a new way of investing envisions two bottom lines, the obvious financial gain and the gain to the community at large. It's called social investing, and one such investment recently boosted the Taste of Immokalee business at Immokalee High School. Today, we'll talk with the students from the Taste of Immokalee and the chairman of the Angel Investment Group about the new movement in socially conscious investments. Plus, SIDS, or sudden infant death syndrome, has long been the sad epitaph to explain the unexplainable, the mysterious deaths of otherwise healthy babies. Improvements in healthcare and education have pushed SIDS out of the headlines in recent years, but researchers continue their efforts to better understand and ultimately end SIDS in our lifetime. We'll speak with a Naples doctor leading SIDS research in the U.S. who says they now have a roadmap that could make SIDS a thing of the past. But first, the news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. SIDS, or sudden infant death syndrome, is the nightmare of any parent. It's the name we use to explain the unexplainable, the unexpected death of an otherwise healthy baby. SIDS deaths fell in the last 25 years due to successful education campaigns in the U.S., but there are still thousands of babies whose deaths are attributed to the mysterious syndrome every year. But now researchers, including a Naples-based institute, say that they have a roadmap for what they need to make SIDS disappear for good. Joining us to talk about this new research is Dr. Betty McIntyre, the executive director of the American SIDS Institute, which is based in Naples. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you, Julie.
We are talking research into sudden infant death syndrome with a Naples-based nonprofit research institute that's hoping to end SIDS in our lifetime. Call in and share your thoughts or questions at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Dr. Betty McIntyre, the term SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome, it's also been called cot death or crib death. It's been a sad catch-all term for a disease that's just unimaginable for most parents.
Right.
Can you give us the strictest definition of SIDS?
Well, it's when infants die, typically in their sleep, when we don't expect it. They weren't sick. And then when an autopsy and a scene investigation is done, no cause is found.
Just no reason.
No reason. There's a larger category that we talk about today called sudden unexpected infant death, SUID. And this is the total category of infants who die in their sleep unexpectedly.
What age range are we talking about here?
Well, there's no cutoff, tell you the truth, but we quit calling it SIDS at age one, and we start calling it sudden unexpected death in childhood. So for parents, it's the same. The older a child becomes, the less likely it is to happen. We actually study children up through three years of age.
Oh, wow.
So it does occur, and there's a lot to be learned at every single age. But I think the important thing for parents is that about 90% of these deaths do occur before 6 months of age. So there is kind of that sigh of relief once the baby is a little older.
Well, I know when I had my daughter, I sighed relief at every milestone.
Every milestone, yes.
You never know. I mean, you just don't know what's going to happen.
Right. And it doesn't get over because eventually they have children and you go through it all over again.
Well, it's just so frightening because nobody knows what causes it, where it comes from.
Well,
I mean, there are some educational points that have come up about the positioning of the child.
Yes, we do know that, and we learned this in the 90s, actually, that if we put babies on their backs and avoid other asphyxiating or suffocating environments, that we can reduce the risk greatly. The number of babies – I've been dealing with these deaths since the 70s. So,
if a baby's in a crib and they have rolled over into the bumpers that they put up and they have too many cushions, I mean, that's suffocation.
We don't do bumpers.
Yeah, but I mean, if somebody does, would it still be called SIDS? Because clearly they suffocated there.
Yes, it's according because no longer are we trying to say, is it SIDS or is it suffocation? Because we believe – that it's both. It's a combination. In the most simple terms, we believe that there are infants who are born or develop the inability to arouse when they're in trouble. So in probably with your baby, when she was up against your chest or when she was up against a pillow or had turned over to her stomach. She moved around. She aroused. She woke up and got out of that. It's a survival mechanism. But there's growing evidence that these babies do have problems arousing, whether it's from brain chemistry abnormality, the conversation that the brain has with the lungs, or whatever, even genetics we're looking at. But these babies just don't have the ability to get out of these asphyxiating problems. So obviously what we tell parents, and it's the most important thing to say, is avoid those situations. Make sure that your baby is sleeping on his or her back in a crib with nothing in the crib, no bumper pads, no cover, not even a baby blanket.
Well, they have onesies with feet and stuff, so they're covered.
Now we wear the cover, so the baby, no matter what movement or position he gets in, he's still safe. It's not going to be around the face.
So I've read about something because, and I don't know that many people have this experience, but sometimes you'll, as an adult, wake mm-hmm. up and be unable to move. Have you ever heard of this? There's something apparently in the brain that, mm-hmm. I mean, you just can't move your body, but you know that your mind is awake and you're just unable to move. And could that be related to
this? Well, we haven't found any relationship to that. No. Hmm. Again, we don't know everything, so I'm not ruling out anything.
Well, the brain's a tough one.
But the brain's a tough one, and the brain's communication with everything else about the body is – we're learning more all the time. But we do – like I said, we do believe that these babies – in general, do have this arousal deficit. However, babies can suffocate without having an arousal deficit. Babies sometimes get down between the bed and the wall, and these deaths are outright asphyxia deaths. And then we still have babies who die on their backs in a crib with nothing around them. Those are rare, but they do occur. These babies may have such a lot or a bad case of this brain chemistry abnormality that they're going to die without being in an asphyxiating environment. But the large majority are a combination of this mm-hmm. with the baby, with this – the vulnerable baby who gets in a vulnerable situation.
Are there any other known risk factors? I mean, are there mm-hmm. contributors with yes. Tobacco, alcohol, breastfeeding during pregnancy?
Yeah, there are certain things you can change, and then we have the – we call them modifiable risk factors. And then there are many other risk factors that you can't change, at least not by the time the child is born. We know that teenagers have much higher rates of these types of deaths. And if they're having their second or third child, they tend to even have higher rates of death.
So teen pregnancies?
Teen pregnancies have higher rates of most types of infant mortality. We also know that male children are more likely to die of SIDS or SUID than females. And again, that's true of other types of deaths as well. Modifiable risk factors, we know that smoking during pregnancy and after pregnancy is a very difficult thing for parents to give up, but it's extremely important for the health of these children. And I know there are a lot of programs out there that I applaud. So if you're thinking about getting pregnant or already pregnant, you're a smoker, you definitely need to reach out and try to get help to quit.
Well, I think the list of reasons to quit smoking during pregnancy right. and mm-hmm. early childhood is pretty
Absolutely,
long.
Absolutely, yes. It's pretty long.
This is another reason to do that.
Yes.
So you're the executive director of the American SIDS Institute, which is involved in research in SIDS. So,
right.
But how do you study something that is by definition so incredibly vague?
Well, but it isn't incredible. I think
it seems vague because we just don't know what.
Right. We used to say this. We used to say that sudden infant death syndrome is neither predictable nor preventable and there's nothing you can do, et cetera. But we don't believe that anymore. Like I said, we believe that it is a medical phenomenon. As we're doing the research, the pieces are falling into place. There's research on orexin 3. That's a brain chemistry. Out of Australia, it's definitely less in these babies than the ones who die from other reasons. The serotonin in the brain is different. That's out of Boston University. Another study out of Australia is the substance P deficiency. All of these things, every study that comes out is pointing to this vulnerability that is medical in the child. So there is a medical reason here. Mm-hmm. They're not just these mysterious deaths that we don't know anything about. That's no longer true.
We are talking about research into SIDS, or sudden infant death syndrome. Call in and ask your questions to our expert, Dr. Betty McIntyre of the Naples-based American SIDS Institute at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we are at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So researchers have had success with education campaigns to bring SIDS deaths down between 1990 and 2015.
Yes.
The cases dropped by more than a half.
Yes.
So part of that was the Back to Sleep campaign. Tell me what that campaign was about.
Okay. The Back to Sleep campaign, the research came out of Australia, New Zealand, and England, not the U.S. We even fought it for a while here. But the epidemiological data, and that's data that just looks at who the risk factors, what the risk factors are, not the medical reasons behind it. Found that babies who slept on their stomachs were more likely to die of sudden infant death syndrome, and then that those studies were replicated other places. So we did start the Back to Sleep campaign, and that reduced the risk of these deaths tremendously all over the world in the 90s. What happened, though, is when we got into the 2000s, the rates leveled off, and we couldn't get them to go down anymore. In addition, of course, to the back to sleep, we also are trying to get parents not to sleep with their children. And the most of the deaths that I see now are babies who are in bed with parents and sometimes other children in adult beds. We also have a high rate of death when babies are sleeping on couches or in chairs with parents. And this is very easy to do. It's easy to go to sleep and your baby where you thought was right by you with nothing around their face, all of a sudden there are many things around them.
Oh, it takes no time.
No time. As a mother, you know this. So the safest place for your baby to sleep is in a crib or a pack and play in your room. The rates are lower if the baby is in the mother's room. And then when you bring your baby into the bed to breastfeed, which we certainly encourage, then you can easily put your baby right back in their own bed in the safe environment.
Mm-hmm. According to the American Academy of Pediatrics, mm-hmm. about a quarter of parents in the U.S. say that they don't put their babies on their backs to sleep.
Right.
Among African Americans, it's about half that say that they don't. And those statistics also say that African American babies die of SIDS at twice the rate of whites. What do you think explains that discrepancy?
That's true. And we don't know what explains it. We're just we're funding a new research project out of the University of Georgia that is looking at a model that involves everyone in the family's sphere of existence to actually have them all be coaches. So as they're learning to be the coach, they're also learning safe sleep themselves and then coaching and providing support to the parents so that it's easy to follow. I think this thing that, you know, I raised six children, they all slept on their stomachs or with me, and they're all healthy grown-up boys and girls. And what we do forget is that during that period – I was studying SIDS then. During that period, the rate was double what it is now when we were doing those things. So even though we got away with it,
mm-hmm.
Just like we got away with most of our children not being in car seats in cars, it doesn't mean it's the right thing to do, and it doesn't mean that other parents will get away with it. The risk is definitely higher if you have your baby in your bed or in a cluttered crib. There's mm-hmm. no doubt.
Yeah, there always are going to be people that say, well, you know, I've smoked until
right.
I was 95,
right.
so cigarettes aren't
yeah.
bad. Now, there's always going to be people that deny what the science and statistics show.
That's correct.
We have a call coming in right now from Roger in Naples. Roger, what would you like to ask?
Well, I was curious to know if there's been any studies to show evidence of whether or not the heart stops first or the breathing stops first. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a good question. So
The breathing stops first.
Is the breathing that stops?
Yeah. In fact, these children probably have breathing problems long before this that we don't notice because we know that lots of babies have we call it periodic breathing, where they quit breathing for a little, they start back, they quit breathing, and their oxygen level goes up and down, intermittent hypoxia. So these children may have too, but it's not anything you would notice because it simply looks like a sighing mechanism in the child. But we are studying this, and there doesn't seem to be anything wrong with the heart.
Okay, but maybe is there anything physically wrong with the lungs at all?
Well, we're funding a study right now. We just started funding this study, too, out of Colorado. And they're looking at the lung tissue of the infants that we have a tissue consortium that we can talk about later. But the lung tissue that this consortium has stored to see if the communication between the lungs and the brain have a problem so that the lungs are not doing their part to reoxygenate the blood.
So like if
easy for you to say.
Yeah, I got you. But whether the problem is originating in the brain, mm-hmm. whether the brain is not telling the lungs to breathe or the lungs are not responding to the brain's message.
Right.
So that's what you're trying to track down
absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely. We're looking at the communication between the two.
So are lungs like the and forgive me if I'm wrong. I forgot neonatal. It's been 6 years.
Okay.
But are lungs kind of one of the last things that develops in a fetus? In a baby?
Well, hopefully it's all going to be developed before birth.
Before
right,
birth.
Yes.
But I mean, what I understand, when premature babies are born, they end up in the oxygen because their lungs are still not fully developed.
Right. Let's talk about premature babies because that's exactly what happens. And, you know, they're given medication to strengthen that before they're born. But one of the studies that we're doing at the SIDS Institute is studying the severely premature baby because those babies never breathe correctly. They always have these irregular patterns of breathing. They also have arousal problems where, you know, if you're in the NICU, you go by and you see nurses kind of, you know, patting the baby and getting them back breathing again. So we decided to study these babies to learn more about what babies in general do because they're the ones that are having the most trouble with it. And we are finding that these babies do tend to have problems controlling respiration and that it may be related to things that have not developed appropriately in the brain and that, in fact, these babies may later on have some developmental issues as well.
Is there more SIDS among babies that are premature?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yes. There's only about 10% of the population premature, and that, of course, depends on where you cut off the prematurity. But a good quarter to a third of the babies who die of SIDS are premature.
So you're talking about a roadmap for the future mm-hmm. in research, one of yeah. which is what you told me about, the tissue studying, mm-hmm. the tissue from the lungs
right.
and figuring out where the communication breakdown is happening. What other projects are in the works that are creating this roadmap?
Okay, so what we did was we got together with England and Australia and similar organizations there to ours, and we decided, you know, we need to approach this in a much more mechanized way. So we had three different workshops all there, here, and here in Naples and in Australia. And we brought together the greatest minds in the world that are dealing with this. And we said, okay, let's look at this. If we had to fill in the gaps that we don't know right now, and we only had 10 years to do it to solve this, what would you focus on? And so we came up with the top 10 gaps, if you will, for each country. And now we've merged it into the top 10 national gaps. And we have a paper that should be coming out soon on that. But one of the top things was to look at how, what we've talked about this morning, how the vulnerability of the child interacts with this asphyxiating environment to create sort of this perfect storm and lead to death. Because probably without both of those occurring, the death is not likely to occur. So that was the number one thing. The other thing was to look at brain abnormalities, to look at genetics. And those fields are changing so rapidly that there's technology available now to look at those things that we didn't have even 5 years ago. So we do have this road map now, and so we know what studies need to be funded. We need to seek out those researchers. We need to fund them, and we need to start putting more of the pieces of the puzzle together.
It sounds like you got together like a dream team sort of thing.
Well, it was, yes.
And then you got your dream of, if I could research this, this would probably give us an answer to these problems. So I identified the holes and the gaps in the
absolutely
in the research and figured out what you needed to fill. And with science changing so much year by year, the research just never ends.
Right.
And the possibilities are always
That is right.
Vast.
But I've been dealing with this field for, as I said, I know I sound young, but I've been doing this since in the 70s, so 40 years. And I'm so excited because I feel like for the first time that I'm going to see this ended in my lifetime. And I'm so excited about it because I've seen so many parents be devastated with these deaths.
I just can't even begin to imagine. And I mean, you've dealt with this like talking to the parents.
Well, I've been in various jobs dealing with SIDS, but of course I get parents call me all the time. My baby died. What do you know? Can you answer these questions? We don't provide grief counseling, but we do try to answer parents' questions.
On a
medical
scientific
questions.
Level. Yeah.
In a very open way, but a very sensitive way.
Yeah.
And so I've talked to thousands of parents, and it's always heartbreaking. You know, it's.
I just can't even imagine. But so I wanted to ask you real quick before we run out of time. The CDC says that anywhere from 3,500 to 4,000 babies die every year from SIDS.
Well, not SIDS.
Well, SIUDS.
Yes. So sudden unexpected.
Suicide.
Yeah.
In 2016 alone, there were more than 3,700 deaths attributed there. And how do we compare to other nations, other developed nations?
Well, if you look at Japan, they have very low rates. The Scandinavian countries; these are countries where health is good anyway. They don't have a lot of diversity, and they provide health care to everyone, and the infant mortality rate in general is low, and so the rate of these deaths are very low too.
Are we kind of on par with Australia and England?
We are. We're pretty on par with them.
Because that's who we met with recently.
Yes, right.
So.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I wanted to thank you for coming in and sharing with us all of this information. It's good to get an update because you don't hear about it all the time.
Can I also say we're having an event this weekend to raise awareness and to raise money for research, because you can see from the things I've said that's the real challenge.
Is that open to the public?
It is. And if they will call the – or just go on SIDS.org and get our phone number.
Yeah, and we have links on our website too.
Great. Okay. It is definitely open to the public. But we would like to know ahead of time they're coming. So if they could call and let us
reserve a spot.
Reserve a spot. That would be great.
All right. I want to thank so much Dr. Betty McIntyre of the Naples-based American SIDS Institute. And you can find those links at WGCUnews.org. Our show today was produced by Matthew Smith and directed by Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.